What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of PGA Grinders Live After Dark. I am your host, Justin Van Zuiden, as always here on the program, and we've got a golf tournament once again this week, so that means we'll be with you. You'll be seeing us quite a bit here in the spring, summer, and fall. There's golf pretty much all year round other than a few weeks in December and the odd random week off here or there for a match play event or something like that. So get used to seeing us here on Tuesday nights. We love to grow the daily fantasy golf game and happy to have you watching the show as the PGA Tour moves from California to Florida this week for the Honda Classic. So a lot of different things to talk about with regard to this tournament being in Florida instead of some of the other places that they've been playing over the last couple months, Hawaii, California, and some different, you know, kind of dynamics, different green setups that we have to consider. We'll break all that down here on the show for you tonight. Alongside me, as usual, Brian Devonshire. Debo, how are you doing on this Tuesday evening?
I'm doing pretty good. It's been unseasonably warm in Colorado. I've been playing a lot of poker lately. There was a Heartland Poker Tournament in town. Made a run, but didn't cash. Spent a lot of time and money. But, you know, it's the grind, the life we have chosen, the noble work we do.
That's right. It is a grind for sure. And I was never in the live poker scene, but of course, can live vicariously through others like yourself and appreciate how much of a true grind that is for the people that are doing that full time. And unseasonably warm still here in Illinois as well. It's supposed to be 73 degrees tomorrow, which is just very strange for the end of February. But not complaining. We'll take it as long as it lasts, especially with the weather that Mr. Gibb Pollard has had up there in the Northwest this year. Has not been so pleasant. But how are we doing these days, Gibb, as far as the Oregon weather?
I heard a fly the other day, and I started getting excited at the fact that the weather was warm enough for a fly to actually exist in the world. So, and then I got annoyed like 3 seconds later that there was a fly around. So, you know, I guess I'm very nitpicky. But, you know, the weather is warming up. I'm happy about it. My 4-year-old daughter asked me when the weather will warm up because she really likes playing outside in her slippers or sandals. So I'm just happy that it's warming up. So, yeah.
Yeah, our kids have spent a good chunk of the last few days outdoors and certainly like when they can burn the energy off outside as well. So as for the golf tournament here, last week they were still out in California for the Genesis Open at Riviera, which is pretty much dominated start to finish by Dustin Johnson. He was pretty much the consensus top guy last week on whatever platform you looked at, and pretty much a lock for your cash games, and pretty much no contest. And I believe it ended up being, what, a 5 or 6 stroke win. But Dustin pretty much had it sewn up there by the end of the third round, which drug on into Saturday. Or the third round drug on Sunday because of the weather issues they had there on Friday. So Dustin Johnson, solid finish last week. And now this week with the move to Florida, we've got a lesser field than what we saw a week ago. It's still, you know, decent at the top, but you don't see the names like we saw last week. And kudos to DraftKings for at least doing something about the pricing. And it's much more fair and balanced, I would say, this week, or at least there's not a lot that really stands out, especially compared to the last few weeks. And Debo, I know, you know, we've been somewhat critical of the pricing over the last few weeks, I think deservedly so. What are your thoughts on where things have landed this week as far as the pricing structure goes?
I definitely think it's better. Like, I understand what they were doing with, you know, trying to create this GPP environment of, you know, forced chalk, as Gibb called it. And at this point, there are values, but they're not glaring, and they're not like just like eye roll, like what in the world, like you don't feel comfortable about fading them kind of thing. So I think it's a much more interesting pricing structure this week. I think that people are definitely going to go some certain directions, but I also think that there's some pretty interesting pivots in all of those spots.
Yeah, and it's not like we still can't have the discussion of ownership percentage. A lot of these guys, I mean, you still will see guys be popular, whether it be because, of course, history, current form, or the occasional guy that just appears to be a little bit mispriced. But it's not like we're going to be throwing 20 names out there that just seem far too cheap. So, Gib, what are your thoughts on the overall layout of the DraftKings pricing structure this week?
Well, the pricing's far better than it was for the last 3 weeks. I would still like a little bit harder pricing, but that's just me. Well, because I am a product of what DraftStreet was, and that was extremely hard pricing. So
I don't think we're going to go back there. I don't think we're going to get there.
Yeah, I know. My opinion, I know. But it's a pipe dream of mine to go back to really hard pricing to where you can only fit one superstar on your team. And if you choose to do that, then you're sacrificing a lot. But at the same time, you know, it's far better. It's so much better than it was for the last 3 weeks because there's no, you know, manufactured chalk.
So there's still a super lack of guys above the average price tag. There's only 11 of them.
Yeah. It's still really easy to make a lineup, average. But
yeah.
It's still really easy to make a lineup, but at least on a relative sense, in terms of the order of the players, they don't seem completely out of whack to where a guy like, I'm just going to pick a cheap guy, Matt Every, is more expensive than, you know, Brendan Steele or something like that. Whereas we've seen that in previous weeks, at least we don't see that this week. And that,
you but know, previously on DraftKings, we have seen $13,000 priced players before and within the same tournament as well. So, you know, I mean, this tournament, maybe not. I don't really see one definitive, hey, this is the greatest player of this tournament type deal, but like you would say at some other tournament, I guess. Memory's like fading me there for which tournament that would be. But at the same time, you know, some of the top players in DraftKings history have been 13,000 before. So why not still continue with that, make it a little bit tougher? But I understand why.
Maybe this pricing is indicative of that.
Sure, sure.
Like, I mean, we have Adam Scott at 12.2K. He's only 11-1, according to Vegas. If we had a Spieth or a DJ at like 6 or 7-1, maybe he would be priced in the 13K range.
Very true. Very true.
That's fair. I think, you know, obviously we'll have to see if we get another tournament like that, you know, where one of the top guys is the top three or four guys, you know, is a Spieth or a Dustin Johnson and see, you know, if a guy's 6-1, something like that, if they'll be priced around 13K. But regardless of what we think regarding the top end pricing, at least in a relative sense, it is a lot better than it was the last few weeks and certainly a step in the right direction based on where last week's was. So I have to commend them for that. The other thing, kind of housekeeping things, if you're used to getting up before the start of a tournament to check your lineups and check for withdrawals or whatever the case may be, tinker with your lineups. If you live on the West Coast like Gib, this tournament's going to lock for you at 3:45 in the morning. So, you know, stay up late, get up really early, or, you know, pull an all-nighter if you want. Who knows? But if you're looking to check your rosters before roster locks, 6:45 a.m. on the East Coast, 3:45 a.m. on the West Coast. And, I mean, it is something that I generally do. I'm in the central time zone, so I can at least make it work. I mean, you know, check at 5:30. I'm usually getting up at 6 o'clock anyway. But it is a change for those of you that are used to 7, 8, 9, 10 o'clock lock times from west to east. You're looking at about 4 hours earlier this week. So, Gib, how have you handled that in the past as a West Coaster? Do you just let it ride and hope that there's no scratches?
I can tell you from a personal standpoint, my wife gets pissed when I set an alarm for, you know, 3:45. So if, you know, I've sort of, it's a delicate thing, DFS. You like, as like majority of the people who play DFS were dudes, you know, majority. So to subject your wife into waking up at 3:45 is just not a smart move on your behalf. So you sort of have to get your ducks in a row before you go to bed. And just sometimes you have to hope and pray that, hey, your dude's not going to withdraw like a Charlie Hoffman. I think it was last season, right, where he withdrew.
Yeah, it was about a half an hour before the start.
Yeah, so, I mean, I can naturally wake up when I want to, because I don't sleep well anyway, so I can sometimes do it, but at the same time, I don't want to subject my whole family into waking up at the same time as me, because that just leads to bad things later on in the day, and you just don't want to deal with that.
Yeah, 3:45 is a tough one. I can swing 5:30, and my wife's already up anyway, but threes, that's a tough call. So anyway, plan that. If you are a person that's playing a high dollar amount and you really want to check that, I mean, set yourself an early alarm. You know, pull back on your play if you're uncomfortable with it and you can't check prior to roster lock. But we are dealing with, once we get on the East Coast here, we're going to be dealing with a lot earlier start times than what we've seen for some of these West Coast events. So just keep an eye on that. Enough of the housekeeping. Go ahead.
I guess my recommendation for anyone on the West Coast, if you really want to check things before the event starts, go downstairs, sleep on the couch, set an alarm. Do not wake your missus up, because, you know, bad things happen after that. But go ahead, Justin.
We are in Palm Beach Gardens this week. PGA National is the golf course. This is a very difficult golf course. You are not going to see a birdie fest this week. I know there are some weeks where maybe we've said that, and then we've ended up seeing pretty good scores. But 8 of the last 10 years here, the winning score has been in the single digits under par. So you're not seeing guys get to 15, 17, 18, 19 under par. It just doesn't happen on this golf course a whole lot. It's a par 70, so there's only 2 par 5s this week. There's water in play on 12 of the holes. And one of the most iconic three-hole stretches in golf, the Bear Trap on the back 9, 15, 16, and 17, a really tough stretch of 3 of the more difficult holes on tour. Water in play on a couple of the par 3s there. And there are just a lot of ways to make a big number on this golf course. So you usually see the cut line fall over par, and you're not going to see a huge winning score in all likelihood unless somebody just dominates the golf course like Dustin Johnson did last week. And that's pretty hard to do here. So, Devo, what do you got in mind as far as stats to target this weekend and how the weather appears to be shaping up?
The weather looks pretty irrelevant as far as giving an edge to either T group. It looks like it's going to be pretty rainy and windy on Wednesday, but the wind's going to calm down. Looks pretty much throughout the weekend. Might get a little rain on Thursday, but not too bad. The only concern for me there is they're expecting about an inch on Wednesday, so it might soften up the course a bit, giving a little bit of boost to the bombers on, you know, Thursday, maybe Friday if it stays wet. I think that most people are going to target driving accuracy this week. I don't think that's necessarily the right way to go. This is definitely a shorter, like less than driver course. There's only 2 par fives that you're really going to have to take advantage of, but there's 5 par fours that are over 450 yards. And so having length there is going to be definitely an advantage. So I think I'm just targeting strokes gained tee to green, you know. I think there's a little bit more correlation with the guys who have done well here with that stat than something like off the tee or driving accuracy or total driving, all those I looked at. I think par four scoring comes up very highly here because that's really going to be where this tournament is won and lost. Of course, you could punt the 2 par fives, but you know they're all very gettable for every one of these guys that are going to be playing this week. Looking at strokes gained approach, strokes gained around the green. And I'm looking for proximity of over 200 yards. A lot of these approach shots are going to be from more than 200 out. So the guys that can do that well should have a bit of an advantage here.
Yeah, well said. I think that all makes a lot of sense, and especially considering the weather on Wednesday. If it softens up the golf course a little bit, might change the way of thinking a little bit and give a little bit more benefit to the guys that can bomb it a long way. Now, I think a key consideration, and we always see this, in weeks after the weather plays a big factor. If you played last week, you know, we kind of hypothesized on the show last week that if any draw had the advantage, it was the early draw on Thursday and the late draw on Friday.
Nice call, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, it was. If I only would have totally listened to my own advice, it would have been better. But you know, it's kind of the battle between, if anybody had the advantage, we knew that draw would get the advantage. alternatively, if the weather was a complete washout on Friday, it would be pretty neutral toward the golfers. And based on how the forecast looked at lock time, I figured, well, they're probably not going to be playing Friday anyway, so why mess up all my lineups? And then in actuality, the guys that were on that good side of the draw got about a 3-stroke edge. So if you stack those tee times, it certainly worked to your advantage. We always talk about this the week after weather plays a big factor. A lot of people will tend to overanalyze it a little bit. And with the wind, you know, kind of being steady, this is always a course where the wind does play a factor, but it doesn't look like it's going to make a huge edge toward one tee time set over the other. Just be careful not to kind of go into hyper overdrive mode, trying to figure out which side of the draw is going to be better, because it's only maybe 2 or 3 times a year that it really, really creates a huge edge. And last week was one of those. So Gib, your thoughts on the course layout we've got here this week and the weather and anything else before we get into the golfers?
Well, I mean, for the last 2, 3, 4 years, maybe every time I read about this event, it's always comes back to, I really favor the British players. It always seems like they seem to make the cut as opposed to miss the cut. I mean, last year it was Rory and Matthew Fitzpatrick, the ones who missed the cut. All the other British players made the cut. You know, I'm doing a quick glance and I'm not really looking for Welsh and I guess Irish flags, but it's sort of like a...
Why do a lot of foreign players like to play here?
Because I think it's a thinking man's course. And, you know, back over in, I guess, over in England or in Britain, I mean, a lot of the courses, you got all those pot bunkers that you have to sort of contend with. So, it, you know, you sort of, you can't just smash it off the tee, because if you land on one of those, you sort of have to sort of take your medicine. So what they end up doing is they're more strategic. I mean, it just seems like English golfers are more strategic in their golfing. You know, whether it's Luke Donald, Ian Poulter, Danny Willett, all those sort of players, they're more strategic. Lee Westwood, they're more strategic in their sort of their golfing approach, as opposed to, say, Dustin Johnson, you know, a Daniel Berger, or a, I'm just starting to think randomly here, where, you know, hey, I'm, or Justin Thomas, I'm going to smash it off the tee and I'm going to sort of approach the green wherever my ball lay. So I just feel like English golfers, they have a more methodical way of dealing with golf, and that sort of lends a hand to sort of this course.
All right, well, enough of the setup. We've gone about 20 minutes on it, so we should get into the golfers for this week. Adam Scott, Ricky Fowler, Justin Thomas are the three guys above the kind of 11K threshold this week. And it's just, it seems like everywhere I look, everyone's talking about Adam Scott. He's the defending champion. You know, he's played well here twice. Gibbs, since he's an Aussie, I'll give you the floor first. I mean, where do you, is Adam Scott clearly ahead of the others for you this week? And I mean, I feel like I know the answer, because I know you're not going to pick Ricky Fowler.
I actually have Sergio, then Adam, Ricky, and then Justin Thomas.
I figured Ricky would be, you know, even farther down the list, maybe 50th or something.
I was heavily on Justin Thomas a couple of weeks ago, and then he missed the cut. Hadn't really played that great since. So, you know, I'm very hesitant about him. I think he'd be the lowest owner of the four players above 10K. I think Sergio is the smarter play out of the top four. So I'm just going with Sergio.
Fair enough. I still think that Adam Scott will be the mega chalk this week, just based on everything I kind of read from the various sources that are out there. It seems like everyone's picking him as the top guy, no matter where you look. So Devo, I assume you like Adam Scott, but it's a matter of how much is everybody going to be on him.
Yeah, you nailed it. He was more popular last week than we expected him to be.
Yeah.
And he finished 11th, and I expect him to be extra popular this week. I mean, there is money to be spent. It's pretty easy to afford one of these guys. And it's not like you have anybody else that you really want to pay up for. I don't think anybody's going to touch Zach Johnson. I don't think Louis Oosthuizen is going to be very popular. I think a lot of lineups are going to start with Russell Knox, but going Scott Knox is probably going to be the number one combo on the board this week. The only way I'm going to touch Scott is if I'm somehow convinced that there's this weird, you know, like reverse thinking in the meta where everyone decides that Scott's going to be too popular, so they're not going to play him. So then it's just best to play the chalk anyways. But I don't really see that happening. Kind of forced by the pricing with there being so few options above the average price tag. And again, there are just so many good options in the 7K range that you can just grab a handful of them and a couple top guys and boom, you got a lineup. So I think Justin Thomas might be the best play of the bunch due to ownership. I totally agree with Gibb that he's going to be the least popular. I wonder how much more popular Ricky will be than Justin, because I do think Ricky is a better horse for this course, stats-wise and course history-wise. And he's starting to round into form, and Ricky's not very popular anyways. I just don't see many people choosing to save a couple $100 off of Adam Scott and going Ricky or Justin. I think Sergio will be significantly more popular than both of them.
Yeah, and that's a pretty hefty price for Ricky, too. I mean, the last time he played, he was $9,500. So, and it's all relative based on the strength of the field and the fact that there's not a ton of guys at the top. And I kind of think that, you know, both Thomas and Fowler will get a little bit overlooked because anybody that's paying up will go to Adam Scott. And then the people that can't quite afford Fowler or Thomas will just naturally fall to Garcia at 10.9. And it's part of the reason why I think Garcia will be popular is simply because he's kind of in his own little bubble there at 10.9K. If you can't quite get up to Fowler or Thomas, you know, and you're not really loving Zach Johnson or Oosthuizen, then I'll just take Sergio Garcia. But, you know, it could lead more people to maybe taking a balanced approach this week. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out with people paying up for Scott, you know, how underowned are Fowler and Thomas. It's tough to get a gauge on that kind of right now, other than the fact that Scott should be popular unless everyone tries to play the reverse psychology game. But we didn't really see that with Dustin Johnson last week. So I don't think we'll see that a whole lot with Adam Scott, but I do think I love Adam Scott this week. I mean, I put him in my video, and full disclosure, I'm thinking about fading him in tournaments just because I think he's going to be too popular, and, you know, I'll pivot to some of these other guys at lower ownership, but still kind of tough to peg based on the pricing changes this week is one factor, and the fact that it is kind of a somewhat weaker field. You got any more thoughts on that, Gibb, as far as those top few guys there?
I just have Sergio as one of the best plays of the week. That's all. You know, he's in the top 30 in all-round ranking, accuracy, stroke gain, tee to green, and ball striking. So, I mean, if this is a course where you work your way around it, then Sergio comes up trumps so far in statistics just for this season alone, not to mention the fact that he's one of the best course horses as well, and he's coming off a win two events ago. Adam Scott, yeah, he's a past champion, but yeah, I prefer just to pay for Sergio and, you know, go from there.
Fair enough. So if we head down, you know, I mentioned that Sergio is in kind of his own little pricing bubble there at 10.9, because then it goes all the way down. Zach Johnson is 1,200 cheaper at 9.7. Oosthuizen at 9.4. There's just not a lot of guys here. Devo, if you're not spending up, if you are trying to go balance this week, I guess the problem is, where do you start? And like you mentioned, I think a lot of people are going to start with Knox.
Yeah, I think Knox is going to be the chalk, and it's not even really close. Now, if you guys haven't heard about FanShare Sports yet, it's pretty interesting where it's kind of automating the way that I would often do my research to kind of predict ownership, and that's just getting a pulse of the industry and who's being talked about on podcasts and who's being written up and, you know, who ESPN likes and who the Rob Bolton article writes and likes and all that stuff. So they just – like take all that and quantify it in, you know, golfer tags, and Knox is far and away the most tagged golfer so far this week. I expect that to continue, which just kind of makes him an auto fade to me. Sure, he looks good. He's got good course history. He's got good form. Yeah, but he's just going to be too popular. I'd much rather go with Louis Oosthuizen at 9.4K. He's got better odds according to Vegas. His stats aren't as good, mostly due to his par four scoring last year. But his recent form is much better than Russell Knox's. And there's a thing with international golfers here. Like 9 out of the last 12 winners have been non-American. And with so many of these expensive guys being Euro Tour players, you know, that typically go overlooked in these contests based in America, that's just kind of who I'm going to be targeting in these more expensive guys.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, you know, there's an area here that even if you don't love Knox, I think some people will get talked into him just because there's not a whole lot of options in this range. A lot of people don't like playing Oosthuizen, especially at 9.4K when he was under 7K the last time he played. Gibb never likes playing Oosthuizen, so there's this natural kind of stench around him, I guess, that nobody wants to play him. Zach Johnson, you know, normally comes up in the discussions anytime you've got an accuracy course or a course with only a couple par fives, but his history here really isn't that great. So then, you know, you kind of transition down to Knox, maybe you transition down to Berger, who's back on Bermuda Greens this week where he really likes playing, and maybe that's where you start your balanced approach. But Gibb, your thoughts kind of on that tier there between the high 8Ks and 10K?
Okay, all I'm going to say about Louis is, one, missed cut in 2013, withdrawal 2012, withdrawal 2011.
Well, he got those out of the way.
Next. Knox, I like a lot, and you know it's going to be chalky, and I admit that. But you know what? If you look at his Florida, he resides in Jacksonville, born in Scotland, resides in Jacksonville, so you can call him a somewhat Florida guy. Valspar, in his first attempt at Valspar, that's the only thing I can see that he's missed a cut in any event in Florida. So you know that's a nice positive for me. I think he's a great cash game player. Other than that, I mean, I don't hate Zach Johnson for GPPs. I wouldn't necessarily call him a good cash game player because Sergio is right there and Russell Knox is right underneath it. But for GPPs, I don't hate it. You know, his recent form isn't that bad. His stats don't really matter. Like, his stats this year don't really hamper his sort of ownership there. So I don't mind Zach Johnson for GPP's sake, but Russell Knox and Sergio Garcia would be the two that I really like the most.
When we go down from there, you're kind of at a range where I think you'll start to see some people get interested in a lot of golfers. You've got Paul Casey at 87, Tyrell Hatton at 85. And if you don't know who, so this is where we'll get into maybe some of the foreign players, and there's others in here as well, but I'll just use Hatton as an example. Tyrell Hatton is a really, really good golfer who you might not be familiar with. My first kind of, foray into him in DFS was last year, heading up into the British Open. And, you know, he was playing really well heading into that and played very well at the British Open last year. He was the only player in the field that had a chance to birdie one of the really short but difficult par threes that's surrounded by bunkers at the course they played at the British Open last year on all 4 days. I don't think he birdied it the last day, but I know he birdied it the first 3 days. And on courses like we have this week with a lot of, holes surrounded by water, there's par threes that are very difficult surrounded by water. This guy's a really good golfer. And again, you might not be familiar with him, but there's a reason he's $8,500 on DraftKings. And, he might fly under the radar just a little bit this week. But there are other names. We'll get to some of them. I'll let the other two talk about those guys. But a lot of foreign players in here when we get to kind of between 8K and 8.7K. Debo, what are your thoughts on some of these guys?
I think Tyrell Hatton is very, very, very interesting. It took me a little digging into him to learn about him today, too. But he's been in pretty amazing form for quite a while on both the Euro and the PGA Tour. His stats look good on the Euro Tour, and the limited stats that he has here look good. In most of the PGA events that he's played in over the last year, he wasn't very popular with the exception of the Travelers sometime last year. But in the Euro Tour events, he is very popular every single week. I bet some of that will spill over into this event, but I don't think it will spill over enough to make him more popular than guys like Knox, Berger, who is the specialist of the week. I think Paul Casey will also get a lot of ownership. I think Gary Woodland will be popular, and I think Brendan Steele is going to be on the end of the chalky end of things this week. So that has me all over Hatton, unless somehow everybody else tells me they're all over him. But I just don't think that there's going to be enough interest in him to offset how I have him projected.
I would agree with you. And even, you know, Casey is kind of hard to peg as to whether or not he'll be popular. But I was reading some tweets from somebody that was out on the course today, kind of following the golfers. And he did mention that Paul Casey was off on his own, working on the driver on the driving range, and did not appear to be happy. And Casey really hasn't been playing, well the last few weeks on tour. So Casey's a fade for me until he gets that figured out, especially on this course where if you're missing the fairways, I mean, the rough is really thick here. And if you're having trouble off the tee, it's just going to spell disaster for you this week. So no Casey for me, but a lot of these other guys I do find interesting. Gib, what's your thought on this range? And you can even go a little bit below Brendan Steele if you want to.
I couldn't agree more. Ty Hatton has been a DFS darling for me since they opened up European Tour DFS, you know, on DraftKings. I really like him. I'm going to have X amount of shares in him. I really do like him as a player. You know, you don't really get to see much stats on him because he does play over in Europe a lot. So, you know, you got to think he has no course history and he doesn't have really much stats to go and sort of peg him as a player. So you might see those who sort of the stats guys fade away from him and the course history guys fade away from him. Recent form, he's one of the best in this field. So I do like him a lot, and I am going to have a fair bit of shares. I do like Gary Woodland. He is sort of always pegged as a bomber, but, you know, he did win the Valspar once, and that was not a bomber's course. So when you take a driver out of his hand, he does seem to do well. So I don't hate him. I think his recent form, his stats, his course history isn't that bad. I have him pegged as, you know, around in the top 10 players in terms of value for this course. So I'm all over Woodland. And I think Brandon Steele is going to be very chalky because he's done nothing to really take him out of that chalk phase era, whatever you want to call it. So I like Brandon Steele as well.
Yeah, 12 straight made cuts. He's 6 for 6 making the cut at this event. So Steele just kind of keeps on chugging along there. Any interest, Gib? You talked about the English players earlier. Any interest in
Matthew Fitzpatrick at all?
Well, what did he do to you?
I just don't respect him. I wouldn't say that. I just don't really trust his game sometimes. And so he, you know, when he comes out of the U.S., he doesn't really perform that well. But sort of when he's over in Europe, he does really well. So I don't trust his game over in the U.S. So I prefer to go to Rafael Cabrera-Bello or Russell Henley or even Brandon Grace. But, you know, the person in that price range I like the most is Charles Howell. And I think everyone else is going to be on that as well. So I got some decisions coming my way.
Yeah, Howell didn't have the best course history last week and still ended up performing pretty well with a 15th place finish. And, again, he just chugs along every year on that West Coast trip, and I haven't seen his form at this event. Do you have that in front of you?
He's rated as the 18th best in this field, but you know what the scary thing is about his form this year? He's in the top 30 in strokes gained putting. I mean, he's lights out tee to green usually. If he's got his putter going, that usually means pretty good things for Charles Howell. So, you know, I
had a good chuckle when I looked at the stats this morning. Do you know who's currently leading the tour in strokes gained putting this year?
I have it on my list, but I don't know who's ranked what. I have the top 30 in my list, but yeah, probably Graham Delatt.
It's Adam Scott, which I would have never expected. I don't think it's a lot of measured round, maybe 12 rounds or something like that. But anyway, he's not the guy you'd peg as the best putter on tour historically.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Add some more fuel to that Adam Scott bandwagon for the week. So I agree with you on most of those guys. Cabrera Bayo is probably the guy that stands out to me. But again, you mentioned we got a lot of foreign-born players here. Cabrera Bayo, Fitzpatrick, Brandon Grace, Danny Willett, Thomas Peters, second place finish last week, Keimer. I mean, lots of Euro players in here. So, Devo, your thoughts on kind of some of these guys between, there's a lot of guys here kind of 7.7, 7.8, 7.9K-ish.
I want to agree with Gib on Raf Cabrera Bello, RCB at 8K. I think he's the premier leverage play there. With all the other things going for him and people being distracted by steel. I'm also interested in Fitzpatrick, though, just because of the reason that nobody's going to be able to trust him because he hasn't done anything over here. But he's gained a lot of strokes on the other side of the pond, and Florida is, you know, pretty close. So if nobody's going to take him, I'll take him. That kind of goes for almost anybody. Right? As far as the 7.9, the top end guys, I'm interested in Brendan Grace at 7.9K. He hasn't been as popular lately as he used to be, but he is rounding back into form. He's really good from 200 plus out. He's another foreign guy. The other guy I'm interested in that range is Danny Willett, 7.8K. Euro coming back into form. I think he finished fifth last week. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, that means stats, he's an autoplay then.
Yep. Stats look good for this course. And I'm just another one of those guys that I think is going to be overlooked. But I'd still rather find a couple dollars and get to either RCB or Matthew Fitzpatrick.
Is everyone going to play Thomas Peters after he finished second last week?
Yeah, but I ain't gonna. This ain't the course for him. He's a super bomber. He's very inaccurate. And,
I agree.
When it comes to really tough courses, I suggest everyone watching this Google Thomas Peters 2016 British Open and what he did with his club. I mean, he
busted it in half.
Yeah, he busted it in half and threw it in the bushes because he was playing poorly. I don't mind Thomas, but there's so many players. Keimer, he's an all-round player. Kisner's an all-round player. Luke Donald is the epitome of an all-round player. Ollie Schneiderjans, all-round player. I mean, there's so much value between what? You know, 7.8 at Charles Howe, and pretty much when we get down to 7.5 to Brooks Koepka, that's so much like decent options right there that I think the ownership is just going to even itself out there.
Did you ever think you'd be recommending Luke Donald again?
I haven't hated his thing. I haven't hated his game. I mean, this is the one course where everyone recommends Luke Donald. So, you know, I think a lot of people are going to be on him. Just compared to other weeks. So, I mean, for all the 7.6, I mean, you have Luke Donald, Ollie Schneiderjans, Keegan Bradley, and Grillo. Those are four pretty decent names for this course. I'm going to go with Ollie because I think he's going to be the lowest owned out of all four of those players because, you know, Luke Donald's a course horse. Keegan Bradley and Grillo have the stats to sort of correlate with this course. Schneiderjans, he's got the recent form, and that's what I like. And so that's the player I'm going to go with in this price and in that exact price range.
Devo, any interest in Mr. Bradley this week?
No, it's weird. I don't like his par four scoring. And I don't like how he is from more than 200 yards. I'm not so sure this is the course from.
Yeah.
Keegan Bradley is a stud at total driving, and I think a little bit of that edge is going to be taken away from him this week. I'm definitely interested in Ollie. His form has been very hot in the last month. He's gaining strokes like crazy in the last 6 weeks. I'm not so sure I like him more than Jason Duffner at 7.5K. But I also think that Dostner is going to be rather trendy. He's got some course history. He's got stats. If you're targeting the accuracy angle, Dostner is very accurate. I think Mark Leishman at 7.5K is going to be my favorite play of that whole bunch of all these guys we're talking about. He's got the good numbers that we're looking for also, but he's just being left out of the conversation. It's like, well, which one of these guys do you want? And they're all pretty interesting. I think Leishman is just as interesting, but he's the one that's not being talked about.
I think the where the ownership falls on some of these other guys depends on just how many people are willing to go to the Koepka well this week. Because there's two schools of thought. There's one school of thought that says he's a Florida kid and, you know, he's going to come back home and he's going to play really well. There's another school of thought that says he's just not right right now. He, you know, maybe he's battling an injury. Some people say that's overblown. You know, the one thing that concerns me is with how high the rough is and how difficult it is here. Koepka's 187th in driving accuracy right now, and that scares me a little too much. So I understand. I totally understand the logic behind going back to Koepka this week. I just don't think I'm going to do it. But to me, that indirectly impacts the ownership of guys like Luke Donald and Leishman and Dufner, and just because, you know, you can only have so many guys in here. So if Koepka's 10% versus 20, that'll obviously filter in with the other guys as well. Diva, I'll get you real quick your thoughts on Koepka here, and then I'll go back to Gibb for some other guys.
I think he's such an interesting case. I mean, he was extremely popular last week and blew the cut. He got unlucky with the draw, though, right?
Yep, he was on the wrong side of the draw.
Okay, so I think people might be able to overlook that just one more time based on the price tag. He's been a DFS darling for so long. But his form hasn't been very good in the last month. So, I don't know. I think he's probably going to come in somewhere around like 18, 20%.
I think that's a fair guess.
He's been 12, 13, and 14 the last, well, so far this calendar year. So, I think anything above 14% is gravy. I think he's going to be lower than that because he's been burning people left, right, and center.
If you look at some of the other tournaments last week, though, I mean, in the $300, he was 23%. In the $33, he was 20%. His ownership went up based on the buy-ins last week. He was lower in the lower buy-ins and higher in the higher buy-ins. If that,
but he's burning the sharp people, how long are the sharp people going to actually stay on him before they realize, hey, I'm going to go somewhere else? There's so much value around this sort of price tag. Why keep sort of going back to the well when you have, you know, let's not be around the bush. Jason Dufner has won more PGA tournaments than Brooks Koepka. You know, Brooks Koepka, Sean O'Hare has either won more or equal to. Keegan Bradley's won more. Luke Donald's won more. I mean, you know, Brooks Koepka, he was a shiny object when shiny objects was great, but at the same time, if he's going to be in a slump, then why risk it? It's not like his career has been Tiger Woods-esque, and I know I'm just going way over the top there, but I'm just saying... Just a smidge there, and I really do understand what I just said, and I am saying, hey, that was just stupid to say. But at the same time, it's not like Brooks Koepka has been this epitome of stellarness over the course of 3, 4, 5 years. He had a great season for a couple of years. Doesn't mean that it's going to translate into consistency throughout every single tournament. So if he's in a slump, he's in a slump. So I have no worries in fading him in terms of some of these other players who showed more consistency.
Fair enough. I think that was well put by everybody there in terms of, you know, how you can approach Koepka this week. And then Gibb, getting down to the kind of 7K to 7.4K. Again, lots of golfers in here. Anybody catching your eye there in the low 7K area?
You know what I'm shocked about is Graham Dlett in the top 30 in strokes gained putting.
So, again, you know, something's got to give sometime.
I know. And that just goes to what Devo says every week. You know, putting has the greatest variance of all the stats out there. But I just smiled. When I saw that, I just looked at it and said, wow. Yeah. So, I mean, it's hard. I mean, I don't mind Graham McDowell. You know, Francesco, he's a very accurate player, really good all-round ranking. He's in the top 30 in all-round ranking, accuracy, and strokes gained tee to green. He just doesn't have great course history here, so that really worries me.
Are you talking about Molinari or McDowell? Yeah,
Molinari. You know, McDowell's, you know, top 30 in accuracy, so, you know, I'm not really on McDowell. It's just, you know, around this lower 7K range, you know, Billy Horschel, I don't mind at all. So, you know, I might have some shares in him. But, you know, around this lower 7K range, Kyle Stanley, Billy Horschel, and maybe, you know, Brian Harman and Ian Poulter. I hate to say it.
Oh, no.
I really do. You know, words cannot describe how much I hate the fact that Ian Poulter just came out of my mouth. But I don't mind it that much. You know, low, small ownership.
Yeah, I don't know if I can get, there, but again, that's a little bit of bias on my part, probably creeping in. Interesting down here with kind of the accurate guys like McDowell, Molinari, Harmon, even Lucas Glover, who's a really good ball striker, has been playing well this week, I think is interesting. Devo, who are some of the guys you like in the low 7Ks?
Like Francesco Molinari at 7.3K. He missed the cut at 7.8 last week and was a little bit more popular than I expected. Hopefully that'll temper his popularity a little bit, but maybe it'll come back with the reduced price tag. He's definitely one of the bigger values that I see on the board. He's super accurate if you're into that sort of thing, but he's also good at the stats I'm looking at, and his form is still very good over, you know, the last several months. And then there's a couple of 7.1K specials that I like a lot here. I think a lot of people are going to go towards Kyle Stanley, maybe a little bit popular. My favorite play at 7.1K is Stuart Sink, the old man himself. He is accurate. He's also very good at the other things that I'm looking at. He's decent for more than 200. He's 22nd in strokes gained approach. His form's actually been pretty good lately. A bunch of made cuts and a bunch of gained strokes. So, and he's got pretty good course history. So he's not going to be very popular because he never is, and there's so many other options in this range that I'm just kind of not really even looking past him. I just think he's so much better than all these other options and going to be lower owned. The only other guy that I'm going to have exposure to at 7.1K is Robert Garrigus. He's super strong tee to green, still in pretty decent form, and has a couple cuts, one miscut here.
23rd at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am a couple weeks ago in his last start. Gib, you'll appreciate this. I put together, in honor of your Ian Poulter recommendation, I put together the all-British team for you this week, and they're all between 7.3K and 8.7K. You've even got $2,100 left in salary cap, so that, you know, when the missus gets mad that you're waking up at 3 in the morning to set your lineups, you can use that extra salary cap on a really nice dinner with your lineup of Poulter, Willett, Donald, Fitzpatrick, Hatton, and Casey. So it's actually a playable team if you want to leave $2,100 on the table and go with the all-British lineup this week. Gib,
sometimes
can I interest
you? That's not that bad, leaving that much money on the table.
Yeah, I mean, you can upgrade. If you come to your senses and decide that you really can't stand Ian Poulter on that team, you've got enough salary left on the table to upgrade Poulter to your favorite player, Oosthuizen, and then the lineup has $0 remaining. And you've got the all-British team plus Oosthuizen. So food for thought there.
I think it was the RSM Classic last year, like in 2016, where I think it was 41,000 was the optimal lineup.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, leaving 2,000 on the table is not crazy, especially in a field that doesn't have a ton of top players. Not that I maybe recommend it this week, but you just never know. It's plausible for sure.
I think it was. I did a sort of a little bit of research on it. I think last season, 21 out of the 45 events, I think, on tour. I forget what the cutoff was. 21 of them were under the optimal lineup was under the 50,000 cap, and that's when DraftKings wasn't tinkering and trying to get more ownership onto players. So just to let you know, you can leave money on the table boys and girls.
Especially in this sport, it's certainly plausible. So we've got about 5 minutes left. We'll touch on some of these cheap guys here. And perhaps my favorite cheap guy of the week. I'm not sure how much this is going to end up flying under the radar come Thursday. I really wish he wouldn't have performed as well as he did last week, but I really like Wesley Bryan at $6,600. Super talented guy that just kind of struggled to put it all together on the PGA Tour at first, but he's made his last two cuts with a 42nd place finish and then a fourth place finish last week at Riviera. And now he's going back to Florida, and you may think, well, he was a rookie. There's no way he's ever played on this course. But if you watch the show Big Break, when Wesley Bryan kind of made a splash for himself, that show was actually filmed. The season that he was on was filmed at Palm Beach Gardens, where they are this week. And then he also had a web.com tour qualifying event at this course where he finished ninth and ended up qualifying and getting his web.com tour card because of that. So he's played here on numerous occasions. It just hasn't been a PGA Tour event. And he's a guy that's very capable of dialing it in with his irons when he's playing well. And he certainly was last week. If not for Dustin Johnson kind of running away with the thing, he would have been in contention on Sunday. So if you're looking for a cheap guy at 6.6K, especially with the pricing changes this week, it's a little bit more difficult to come across guys that you really like down here. But Wesley Bryan's kind of the guy that I've honed in on here over the course of the last 24 hours or so. Devo, you got any thoughts on some value plays, super value plays?
I think that's an interesting call with Wesley Bryan. I love watching that guy hit trick shots.
Yeah, we'll see how it works. Sounds good now, but I'll reserve judgment on my call till Friday.
Yeah, right. Will Wilcox right there in the same price range. He had a nice little fifth-place finish. Willie Wilcox, that's true. I like JJ Spahn at 6.7K. He's been in really, really good form lately. His stats check out well from the web.com tour. And hopefully people kind of forgot about that little fourth and ninth and 50th place finish because he missed a cut after playing for a fifth straight week, but he took a week off and now he's coming back. I think he is still underpriced. Also interested in Harris English. See, he seems a little cheap to me at 6.6K, still 100-1 according to Vegas. Same with Anirban Lahiri.
Yeah, I like Lahiri.
Alex Chayka.
I think Lahiri is a pretty safe play down there if you're looking for a guy to just make the cut. I do agree. Harris English is the guy that first popped out to me that said maybe he's underpriced. I just don't know if this is the best course fit for him, but the price tag does seem cheap, especially when you compare the Vegas odds. So, Gib, any sleepers for you here?
I don't mind Jonathan Vegas. Stuart Sink is exactly what Devo mentioned. Richie Well, I'm going to butcher his name, Werliski. He's coming up pretty good and in ball striking, and he's been in recent form. His recent form is pretty good, 18th, I think, in this field. Michael Thompson, he's been putting well, and he's a past champion here. His recent form isn't that bad, so I don't hate it. It's not until you get to, John Ha. In the last 6 months, he's only missed one cut in the last 6 months. Technically, he's missed two since it was a MDF. But still, in a really tough course, players who can just make the cut and sort of make the scoreboard tick over, that's what we really want at these cheaper guys. So John Ha technically has only missed one cut, and that was at the Career Builder, and that's not really an event anyway.
Says the guy who's just been pegging picks for that event for the last couple of years. It's not really an event anyway, but
Seamus Power and John Senden have low trajectories, so, and they might be decent picks if the wind picks up.
All right, that's going to take care pretty much of the show for this week. Next week, we've got a World Golf Championships event in Mexico, which used to be the tournament that was held at Doral. So that will be a really interesting discussion. It's a no cut event next week, so we'll be back to kind of a weird format, but at least still only being played on one golf course. So stay tuned. Plenty of discussion on that tournament next week. Lots of action to follow with the Honda Classic this week. So good luck with all of your lineups here. And for Gib, for Devo, we appreciate you joining us, and we will see you 1 week from now. Good luck, everybody, and we'll see you in 7 days.